I'm Mike McKissick. I'm an alcoholic. Chapter 8. We're going to do the unread chapters today. 8, 9, 10, 11. Two wives. Go to the footnote at the bottom page, just because it helps clarify these chapters. Written 1939, when there were few women in AA, this chapter assumes that the alcoholic in the home is likely to be the husband. But many of the suggestions given here may be adapted to help the person who lives with a woman alcoholic, whether she is still drinking or is in recovery in AA. Further sources of help is noted on page 121, which is the reference to the fact that Al-Anon was then formed 13 years after the publication of the big book. And then Al-Anon sort of stepped in where the original AA was a family affair in those first years, that Al-Anon came along then and sort of substituted for the work with family and with the wife. So we don't do as much anymore as we used to do, but it's all still got good information in here on how to deal with it. So with few exceptions, page 104, with few exceptions, our book thus far has spoken of men, but what we have said applies quite as much to women. Our activities in behalf of women who drink are on the increase. There is every evidence that women regain their health as readily as men if they try our suggestions. But for every man who drinks, others are involved. The wife who trembles in fear of the next debauch, the mother and father who see their son wasting away. Among us are wives, relatives, and friends whose problem has been solved, as well as some who have not yet found a happy solution. We want the wives of Alcoholics Anonymous to address the wives of men who drink too much. What they say will apply to nearly everyone bound by ties of blood or affection to an alcoholic. As wives of Alcoholics Anonymous, we would like you to feel that we understand, as perhaps few can. We want to analyze mistakes we have made. We want to leave you with the feeling that no such situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. We have traveled a rocky road. There's no mistake about that. We have had long rendezvous with hurt pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear. These are not pleasant companions. We have been driven to maudlin sympathy, to bitter resentment. Some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. Our loyalty and desire that our husbands hold up their heads and be like other men have begotten all sorts of predicaments. We have been unselfish and self-sacrificing. We have told innumerable lies to protect our pride and our husbands' reputations. We have prayed, we have begged, we have been patient, we have struck out viciously, we have run away, we have been hysterical, we have been terror-stricken, we have sought sympathy, we have had retaliatory love affairs with other men. Our homes have been battlegrounds many an evening. In the morning we have kissed and made up. Our friends have counseled, chucking the men, and we have done so with finality, only to be back in a little while, hoping, always hoping. Our men have sworn great solemn oaths that they were through drinking forever. We have believed them when no one else could or would, then in days, weeks, months, a fresh outburst. The thing here for an alcoholic in reading to the wives is to try to understand, you know, I'm so selfish and self-centered. You know, one of my great delusions, you know, lying to myself and believing it, is I never hurt anybody but myself. And when you read this chapter, for me, it's like, wow, you know, I put my wife and my mother and my family through this. Because at the time that I was drinking and using, I'm not looking at all the hysteria that's going around. And you know, I came from an alcoholic family. So I live this. And I still, my mind clicks that off. No. I have no comprehension that all of this is taking place around me. So we seldom had friends in our home, never knowing how or when the men of the house would appear. We could make few social engagements. We came to live almost alone. When we were invited out, our husbands sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them killjoy. There was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. An armored car could not have brought the pay envelopes home. The checking account melted like snow in June. Sometimes there were other women. How heartbreaking was this discovery? How cruel to be told they understood our men and we did not. The bill collectors, the sheriffs, the angry taxi drivers, the policemen, the bums, the pals, and even the ladies they sometimes brought home, our husbands thought we were so inhospitable. Joy killer, nag, wet blanket, that's what they said. Next day they would be themselves again, and we would forgive and try to forget. We have tried to hold the love of our children for their father. We have told small tots that father was sick, which was much nearer the truth than we realized. They struck the children, kicked out the door panels, smashed treasured crockery, and ripped the keys out of the piano. In the midst of such pandemonium, they may have rushed out, threatening to live with the other woman forever. In desperation, we have even got tight ourselves, the drunk to end all drunks. The unexpected result was that our husbands seemed to like it. Perhaps at this point, we got a divorce and took the children home to father and mother. Then we were severely criticized by our husband's parents for desertion. Usually, we did not leave. We stayed on and on. We finally sought employment ourselves as destitution faced us and our family. We began to ask medical advice as the sprees got closer together. The alarming physical and mental symptoms, the deepening pall of remorse, depression and inferiority that settled down on our loved ones. These things terrified and distracted us. As animals on a treadmill, we have patiently and wearily climbed back in exhaustion after each futile effort to reach solid ground. Most of us have entered the final stage with its commitment to health resorts, sanitariums, hospitals, and jails. Sometimes there was screaming delirium and insanity. Death was often near. Under these conditions, we naturally made mistakes. Some of them rose out of ignorance of alcoholism. Sometimes we sensed dimly that we were dealing with sick men. After we finally understood the nature of the alcoholic illness, we might have behaved, had we understood the nature of the alcoholic illness, we might have behaved differently. How could men who love their wives and children be so unthinking, so callous, so cruel? There could be no love in such persons, we thought. And just as we were being convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolves and new attentions. For a while, they would be their old sweet selves, only to dash the new structure of affection to pieces once more. Ask why they commenced to drink again, they would reply with some silly excuse or none. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Could we have been so mistaken in the men we married? When drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. And even if they did not love their families, how could they be so blind about themselves? What had become of their judgment, their common sense, their willpower? Why could they not see that drink meant ruin to them? Why was it, when these dangers were pointed out, they agreed and then got drunk again immediately? These are some of the questions which race through the mind of every woman who has an alcoholic husband. We hope this book has answered some of them. Perhaps your husband has been living in that strange world of alcoholism where everything is distorted and exaggerated. Doctor's opinion, I cannot tell the true from the false. I don't know what's real, and I don't know what's not. My life seems normal, is what Dr. Silkworth told me. You can see that he really does love you with his better self. Of course, there is such a thing as incompatibility, but in nearly every instance, the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and inconsiderate. It is usually because he is warped and sickened that he says and does these appalling things. Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than ever before. Try not to condemn your alcoholic husband, no matter what he says or does. He is just another very sick, unreasonable person. Treat him, when you can, as though he had pneumonia. When he angers you, remember that he is very ill. There is an important exception to the foregoing. We realize some men are thoroughly bad-intentioned, that no amount of patience will make any difference. An alcoholic of this temperament may be quick to use this chapter as a club over your head. Don't let him get away with it. God, are we the best manipulator? Show me something in the book, a piece that I can pick up, I'll take it. Did I tell a story about when I quit for the first time in 85 and I stopped for a year? You know, read the book, found page 80, page 34, and said, if you can say, no, you don't drink for a year, then you're probably not one of us. So I went to my wife, I said, hey, it says in their book, if I can do this, then you can't call me an alcoholic ever again, right? Right, let's cut a deal. It was a swell deal at the time. You know, when I got back, it took me 16 more years to get back to the book. So there's an important exception. There is an important exception. Don't let him get away with it. If you're positive he is one of this type, you may feel you had better leave. Is it right to let him ruin your life and the lives of your children? Especially when he has before him a way to stop his drinking and abuse if he really wants to pay the price. I carried that resentment for my mother for a long time. And still sticks in my craw. My mother was a martyr. And my father was a raging alcoholic. Unlike Don's story, which he's told a little bit of today, you know, his mother was also an alcoholic, but my mother wasn't. She was not going to leave, and she would not leave, and there was no way that you could get her to leave. And I carried that resentment around forever. Why am I being put through this just because you want to stay with this fool? You know, and I'll never be like that fool. You know. The problem with which you struggle usually falls within one of four categories. One, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant, or it may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive. He can handle his liquor. It does him no harm. That drinking is a necessity of is necessary in his business. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. This world is full of people like him, some who moderate or stop altogether, and some who won't. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics in a while. At the time, Bill's trying to find a way for the spouse of an alcoholic to identify where they are in that dilemma, you know, to try to find that comfort. Because there's no Al-Anon, there's no AA other than the AA that just started, and they're all together now talking about it, so we want to pay some attention to it. But I got to find some identification. It's the same process of identification that one alcoholic to another alcoholic goes through. I need to understand what the problem is. So two is your husband is slow, is showing lack of control. For he's unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. He often gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but it's positive that he will do better. He's begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also, to hold his nervousness in check. He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts and tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think once more how he can drink moderately next time. We think this person is in danger. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. Perhaps he can still tend to business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to want to stop. Three, this husband has gone much further. than husband number two. Though once like number two, he has become worse. His friends have slipped away. His home is a near wreck and he cannot hold a position. Maybe the doctor has been called in and the weary round of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. He admits he cannot drink like other people, does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop but cannot. His case presents additional questions which he shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. For then, if you have a husband of whom you completely despair, he has been placed in one institution after another, he is violent, or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has had delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you've already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. Let's go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer after a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You may have passed happy evenings together chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties, which would be dull without liquor. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves and we had a good time. We know all about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has its advantages when reasonably used. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. Patience and good temper are most necessary. Our next thought is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he is misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband continues to drink. We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so, no matter how hard you try. But we know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow. But you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you're not critical during such a discussion. Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. See, then a lot of these suggestions sort of sound like what we just did in chapter working with others. You see, as a spouse, you don't feel trying to impart the fact that you got to be treating them the same way that we got to treat them. If they aren't going to go themselves, there's nothing you're going to do to take them there. When a discussion does arrive, you might suggest he read this book or at least the chapter on alcoholism. Tell him you've been worried, though perhaps needlessly. You think he ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. Show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of his health. Thus you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. He probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. You may suggest that both take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. If this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject, but after a friendly talk with your husband, will usually revive the topic himself. This may take patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. So now Bill's suggesting, what do I do when I'm having a problem? I work with others. Suppose, however, that your husband fits the description of number two. The same principle which applied to number one should be practiced. But after his next binge, ask him if he would really like to get over drinking for good. Do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else. Just would he like to? The chances are he would. Show him your copy of this book and tell him that you have found out what you have found out about alcoholism. Show him that as alcoholics, the writers of the book understand. Tell him some of the interesting stories you have read. If you think he will be shy of a spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism. Then perhaps he will understand, he will be interested enough to continue. If he is enthusiastic, your cooperation will mean a great deal. If he is lukewarm or thinks he is not an alcoholic, we suggest you leave him alone. Avoid urging him to follow our program. The seed has been planted in his mind. He knows that thousands of men, much like himself, have recovered. But don't remind him of this after he has been drinking, for he may be angry. Sooner or later, you're likely to find him reading the book once more. Wait until repeated stumbling convinces him he must act, for the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery will be delayed. If you have a number three husband, you may be in luck. Being certain he wants to stop, you can go to him with this volume as joyfully as though you had struck oil. He may not share your enthusiasm, but he is practically sure to read the book and he may go for the program at once. If he does not, you will probably not have long to wait. Again, you should not crowd him. Let him decide for himself. Cheerfully see him through more sprees. Talk about his condition or this book only when he raises the issue. In some cases, it may be better to let someone outside the family present the book. They can urge action without arousing hostility. If your husband is otherwise a normal individual, your chances are good at this stage. You would suppose that men in the fourth classification would be quite hopeless, but that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given up on them. Defeat seemed certain, yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. There are exceptions. Some men have been so impaired by alcohol that they cannot stop. Sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. A good doctor or psychiatrist can tell you whether these complications are serious. In any event, try to have your husband read this book. His reaction may be one of enthusiasm. If he is already committed to an institution, but can convince you and your doctor that he means business, give him a chance to try our method, unless the doctor thinks his mental condition too abnormal or dangerous. We make this recommendation with some confidence. For years, we have been working with alcoholics committed to institutions. Since this book was first published, AA has released thousands of alcoholics from asylums and hospitals of every kind. The majority have never returned. The power of God goes deep. You may have the reverse situation on your hand. Perhaps you have a husband who is at large, but who should be committed. At large. I don't think I ever thought of myself as at large. I should have been committed, but I don't think I was a monk. Some men cannot or will not get over alcoholism. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing is to lock them up. But of course, a good doctor should always be consulted. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, the road will be smoother. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking, and you hate to meet your friends. You draw more and more into yourself, and you think everyone is talking about conditions at your home. You avoid the subject of drinking, even with your own parents. You do not know what to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you become a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented. We find that most of this embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friends know the nature of his illness. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. When you have carefully explained to such people that he is a sick person, you will have created a new atmosphere. Barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. You will no longer be self-conscious or feel that you must apologize as though your husband were a weak character. He may be anything but that. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. The same principles apply to dealing with children. Unless they actually need protection from their father, it is best not to take sides in any argument he has with them while drinking. Use your energies to promote a better understanding all around. Then that terrible tension that grips the home of every problem drinker will be lessened. Frequently you have felt obliged to tell your husband's employer and his friends that he was sick, when as a matter of fact, he was tight. Avoid answering those inquiries as much as you can. Whenever possible, let your husband explain. Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to people when you have the right to know where he is and what he is doing. Discuss this with him, and when he is sober and in good spirits, ask him what you should do if he places you in such a position again. But be careful not to be resentful about the last time he did so. There is another paralyzing fear. You may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You are thinking of the disgrace and hard time which befall you and the children. This experience may come to you, or you may have already had it several times. Should it happen again, regard it in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. It may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. And now you know that he can stop if he will. Time after time, this apparent calamity has been a boon to us. It has opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. We have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when lived on a spiritual plane. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. We wives found out that, like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. And we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. As our husbands begin to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we begin to see the desirability of doing so too. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. We thought, on the whole, we were pretty good women, capable of being nicer if our husbands stopped drinking. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. Now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our life. When we do that, we find it solves our problems too. The silly lack of fear, worry, hurt, feeling is a wonderful thing. We urge you to try our program, for nothing will be so helpful to your husband as a radically changed attitude toward him, which God has shown you how to have. Go along with your husband if you possibly can. Isn't this amazing that, you know, Bill here is talking about, you know, we got the steps and we're telling you that you should be doing the program. It's not a different program. It's not an exclusive program. It's not a program. It's a program of all inclusiveness for everyone that's dealing with the problem. I don't hear him say, you know, we've got the solution for your husband. We think you should go pound salt. You should go away. No, you should be involved in the way of living that we're talking about with the husband. It's a family thing. If you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problems of drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy. But all problems will not be solved at once. Seed has started to sprout in the new soil, but growth has only begun. In spite of your newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs. Many of the old problems will still be with you. This is as it should be. The faith and serenity of both you and your husband will be put to the test. These workouts should be regarded as part of your education, for thus you will be learning to live. You will make mistakes, But if you are in earnest, they will not drag you down. Instead, you will capitalize them. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. Some of the snags you encounter are irritation, hurt feelings, and resentments. Your husband will sometimes be unreasonable and you will want to criticize. Starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute will gather. These family dissensions are very dangerous, especially to your husband. Often, you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic. We do not mean that you have to agree with your husband whenever there is an honest difference of opinion. Just be careful not to disagree in a resentment or critical spirit. You and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than you can the trivial ones. Next time you and he have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either to smile and say, "This is getting serious. I'm sorry, I've got disturbed. Let's talk about it later." If your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. Your husband knows he owes you more than sobriety. He wants to make good. You must not expect too much. His ways of thinking and doing are the habits of years. Patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. We women carry with us a picture of the ideal man, the sort of chap we would like our husbands to be. It is the most natural thing in the world, once his liquor problem is solved, to feel that he will now measure up to that cherished version. The chances are he will not. For like yourself, he is just beginning his development. Be patient. Another feeling we are very likely to entertain is one of resentment, that love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. We do not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic is accomplished in a few weeks, that which we had struggled for years. At such moments, we forget that alcoholism is an illness over which we could not possibly have had any power. Your husband will be the first to say it was your devotion and care which brought him to the point where he could have a spiritual experience. Without you, he would have gone to pieces long ago. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. After all, your family is reunited, alcohol is no longer a problem, and you and your husband are working together towards an undreamed of future. Still another difficulty is that you may become jealous of the attention he bestows on other people, especially alcoholics. You've been starving for his companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and their families. You feel he should now be yours. The fact is, he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety. Sometimes he will be so interested that he becomes really neglectful. Your house is filled with strangers. You may not like some of them. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not at all about yours. It will do little good if you point that out and urge more attention for yourself. We find it a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. You should join in his efforts as much as you possibly can. We suggest that you direct some of your thought to the wives of his new alcoholic friends. They need the counsel and love of a woman who has gone through what you have. It is probably true that you and your husband have been living too much alone, for drinking many times isolates the wives of alcoholics. Therefore, you probably need fresh interests and a great cause to live for as much as your husband. If you cooperate rather than complain, you will find that his excess enthusiasm will tone down. Both of you will awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others. You, as well as your husband, ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take out. Inevitably, your lives will be fuller for doing so. You will lose the old life and find one much better. Perhaps your husband will make a fair start on the new basis, but just as things are going beautifully, he may dismay you by coming home drunk. If you are satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed. Though it is infinitely better that he have no relapse at all. It has been true that many of our men, it has been true with many of our men, is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activity if he expects to survive. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know it. Cheer him up and ask him how you can be still more helpful. The slightest sign of fear or intolerance may lessen your husband's chances of recovery. In a weak moment, he may take your dislike of his high-stepping friends as one of those insanely trivial excuses to drink. We never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation. The slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or his affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. This is important. If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he's not. If not, it had better be found out right away. Then you and your husband can get down, right down to fundamentals. If a reputation is to be prevented, place the problem along with everything else in God's hands. We realize that we have been giving you much direction and advice. We may have seemed to lecture. If that is so, we're sorry, for we ourselves don't always care for people who lecture us. But what we have related is based on experience, some of it painful. We had to learn these things the hard way. That's why we are anxious that you understand that you avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless.
All right. Good morning. Good job, Michael. Got them warmed up. I can see they're just tickled to death.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, they got coffee eyes. I had a Diet Coke. That's about as high as I can get. We're trying to look at this a little bit different. We're trying to look at this as something you, the alcoholic, can use to help the families. I guess I was thinking about the best way to put that as he was talking about it, and I wrote in the front of the chapter, under the guidance of other alcoholics. The alcoholic, remember what he told us in chapter 7, working with others, how we brought their families into this way of life. So the alcoholic is working with the family. Does that make sense? And we would take them through the steps, and they would come into this way of life. Who else could do it? There isn't anybody else. So it has to be the alcoholic. Today, of course, we have Al-Anon. God bless them. Release you with love. Get out before I shoot you is more like it. So 122, the family afterwards. We're just kind of drifting through these things so that you can gain from the chapters some things that you might use in your 12-step work. Or if you're an Al-Anon, you might even gain something from this to use in your 12-step work. The chapter was written to Wise by Bill Wilson. And someone was asking me a minute ago. He asked Ann Smith, is the rumor? And probably not a rumor, probably it's true. And she said no. She was a very high-principled woman. And then there were people who would tell you that Lois had a resentment because he didn't ask her. But it wasn't about that. That's the deal. That's why it isn't. It isn't about that. It is about working with others, if that makes any sense to you. So he says the family afterwards. Our women folk have suggested certain attitudes a wife may take with a husband who is recovering because they're getting some experience now. The families are getting experience with the recovery. Perhaps they've created the impression that he may be wrapped in cotton wool and placed on a pedestal. Successful readjustment means the opposite. All members of the family should meet upon common ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. Those are called principles. In this, it involves a process of deflation. Bringing humility is deflation. The alcoholic, his wife, his children, his in-laws, each one is likely to have fixed ideas. We're chained to old ideas, we said. About family attitudes towards himself or herself. He's repeating the actor's story. He says each is interested in having his or her wishes respected. We find the more one member of the family demands the other concede to him, the more resentful they become. Yes, sir. This makes for a discordant unhappiness. And why? Is it not because each wants to play the lead? Is not each trying to arrange the family show to his liking? Is he not unconsciously trying to see what he can take from the family life rather than give? Right back to the old actor story. Sensation of drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained and abnormal condition. When I read that for the first time, I went, holy mackerel, that's how I was raised. In a highly strained and abnormal condition. Now, I didn't know that. I'm just getting up to the firing line every day, doing the best I can. When you raise children, puppy dogs, family members, goldfish, in a highly strained and an abnormal condition, what you get is a highly strained and abnormal goldfish child, family members, pretty soon. But their life seems normal to them. This is not something you just take on overnight, you grow into it. So in my case, people say, you took care of your sister, she was 7 years younger, in this alcoholic home, therefore you're a codependent. No. No, you just step up and do the best you can. It's normal. You know, you just step up. Sensation of drinking is but the first step away. We got that. A doctor says to us, years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wild or child neurotic. What is a neurotic? A neurotic is someone who has to be in control. And he just told you that the paragraph above. He gave you an explanation of what a neurotic is. Someone who has to be in control. So in AA, when you're young enough and sometimes old enough and you decide to get in relationships and you're from alcoholic families, guess what? You might have two people fighting for control right off the bat in a hurry. It makes it difficult. The entire family is to some extent ill. Let families realize as they start their journey that they will all not be fair weather. Each in his turn may be footsore and may straggle. No one gets this program at the same pace as the next guy. And so you have the experiences of Bill Wilson, which is right now and quick and involves some sort of lights and spirit and such things as that, God's voices sometimes. And then you have people who get it the long way around by what is called an awakening. And then everything in between, you see. There will be alluring shortcuts and bypasses down which they may wander and lose their way, the family. Suppose we tell you some of the obstacles, he's going to tell you the problem. I want to go back to what Mike was talking just a little bit. My head's still back in that chapter. The four alcoholic conditions are great for you to use when you go in somewhere to do a wet 12-step call and you have a loved one you can speak with. You can search out through those four places where the alcoholic might be and what his drinking pattern is at the time. And then you may be able to put him in one of those classifications. It just kind of helps drunk's drunk. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? But it may help you and them. As you do that, it's a good read. A lot of times when I go in to talk to people, I want to know how long they've been drinking this way. 8 days, not enough. call me between 10 and 14 if you're willing to do something, you know. So, suppose we tell you some of the obstacles a family will meet. Suppose we suggest how they may be avoided, even converted to good use for the others. The family of the alcoholic longs for the return of happiness and security. Their instincts are threatened. The family's instincts are threatened by the alcoholic. Their security instinct, their social instinct. So it says, they remember when father was romantic, thoughtful, and successful. Today's life is measured against that of other days, and when it falls short, the family may be unhappy. Those old ideas. Family, one of the things you're going to see in here, I don't need to tell you this, they were really big on holding the families together. Can you see that? Almost beyond reason. These women hanging on to these men were angels, for God's sake. That's what they're asking you to be. They're asking you to forgive everything, and, you may get a little girlfriend on the side. Don't get too excited. Give me a break. But it does work. Family confidence. It works a lot better if you've got a spiritual life of your own. Family confidence in dad is rising high. The good old days will soon be back, they think. Sometimes they demand that dad bring them back instantly. God, they believe, almost owes this recompense on a long overdue account. But the head of the house has spent years in pulling down the structure of business, romance, friendship, health. These things are now ruined or damaged. It will take time to clear away the wreckage. Though old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones, the new structure will take years to complete. Father knows he's to blame. Nobody had to tell me. My first inventory at 37 days was all about my first wife and children. Nobody had to tell me. I knew. It may take him many seasons of hard work to be restored financially, but he shouldn't be reproached. Maybe he will never have much money again. But the wise family will admire him for what he is trying to do rather than what he is trying to get. This is a very special group of people. I keep reinforcing that with you. Most of us don't know how special we really are. Now and then the family will be plagued by spectrums from the past, which drinking career is almost every alcoholic is marked by escapades, funny, humiliating, shameful, or tragic. To who? Did you ever be at a meeting where there are what we call normal people? An open meeting, And maybe there's some Al-Anons there. I'm not making fun of them, it's just the truth. Or maybe just some relatives of some sort. They just wanted to go to a meeting someplace. Or just somebody was interested in coming to AA to get some education, Once in a while we have people show up that are doing papers in college on, they're becoming addiction specialists. And we are the specialists, but they want to be something else. Anyway. And they're sitting in the meeting and we start talking about being 5150 and everybody laughs. Or driving the car off of the cliff and just wrap the steel all around you and God protected you and you get out with a scratch on your forehead 100 foot down. We all go, oh, that's so funny, And they all have this look on their face of horror, It's like, what's funny about that, They don't get the joke, But we laugh at tragedy and every once in a while we kind of giddy about shameful things we might have done, Oh boy, humiliating, oh yeah, we tell on ourselves, The first impulse will be to bury these skeletons in dark closets and padlock the door. The family may be possessed by the idea that future happiness can be based only upon forgetfulness of the past. We think that such a view is self-centered and in direct conflict with the new way of life, of living. There, gave you a clue. Direct conflict, self-centeredness is in direct conflict with your new way of life. Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is a thing of supreme value in life, that one that is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. The alcoholic past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it's almost the only one. It is also quite valuable to help another alcoholic with, because we have shared experiences in life. This painful past may be infinite value to other families still struggling with their problems. You betcha. My first sponsor, rotten old devil. You know, when you're first get here, you don't know anything. I mean, you're just doing the best you can, you know. And meetings are enjoyable, and you join in and talk when you don't even know what they're talking about. It's just, you know, a lot of fun. And so I said to him, the first time anybody ever asked me to secretary or chair a meeting, you know, only 15-minute deals, you know. I can't even get my breath in 15 minutes hardly anymore. But anyway, somebody says, come over and do a 15-minute spot for me. I said, I can't even get my wind in 15. It just, you know, but we go anyway. But, you know, that I said to him, John, in great adulation, John, I've been asked to secretary a meeting. What I'm really saying is, come and see your proud product. You know, come and watch your son do his thing. I want to show you how good I'm doing, you know. He said, well, you may be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous that that person will ever see, so you'd better be the very best you can be. And I'm going, oh, God. You know? Thanks, John, for the vote of confidence. Which has been, we think each family which has been revived owes something to those who have not. Exactly. When you're touched by grace, you must give grace. We do owe. I will owe to the day I die. I hope that it's my God will allow me to continue on till the day of doing this. I've never had it better. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. So when you're doing a fifth step with someone and you're trying to help that person to get across some of those things that are so hideous in their past, you bring out some of your own stuff, you know. And they look at you like, I can't believe that you ever did that. Because they're looking at a new human being. They don't see you. I said, you want to find out how it really was? Here's the phone number of my first wife. Call her up. She'll tell you. A lot closer to the truth than what you're going to get from me, probably. Showing others who suffered how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. You betcha. Woo! That's exciting stuff. Cling to the thought that in God's hands the dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others. What do you think about that? My goodness. Why we were chosen, somebody was handing out here. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. It's insanity to do the same thing over and over, expecting the same results. And that's what people who are around us try to do, because they get so frustrated they don't know what to do. I had an old aunt who used to come home drunk. It used to beat her up. She was smarter than my mother. She would bring him in, set him down, and get him a drink and some dinner. And she'd get him so drunk, she'd tie him up with a sheet in the chair. And when he passed out, she'd take a small frying pan and just beat the holy hell out of him. The next day, he would come to, and he thought he'd been in the damnedest fight he'd ever been in his life. In a blackout. God, I love her. It is possible to dig up past misdeeds so they become a blight, a vegetable plague, veritable plague. For example, we know of situations which the alcoholic and his wife have had love affairs. In each flush of the spiritual experience, they forgave each other and drew closer. The miracle of reconciliation was at hand. You bet it was. It is a miracle. Then under one provocation or another, the aggrieved one would unearth the old affair and angrily cast its ashes about. We talked about that in step 9. To make a nice step amends is a simple process. We don't have to dig in and cast the ashes about because it just brings up the resentment again. So a few of us have had these growing pains and they'd hurt a great deal. Husbands and wives have sometimes been obliged to separate for a time until new prospect, new victory over hurt pride could be re-won. In most cases, the alcoholics have either or bail without relapse, but not always. So we think that unless some good and useful purpose is to be served, past occurrences should not be discussed. There are some places, though, that you're going to have to. It'll talk about that. I tell people all the time, my wife is going to divorce me. I say, yeah. I know people have been married to the same woman two or three times. You know, I mean, you know, if this is intended to be, you can get married again. You know. Oh, my God, it's so thrilling. You know, it just, we get so caught up. You know, when people get married, generally speaking, I'm just going to make a general statement, but there's something between those two people that's special. Does that make any sense to you? Now, my first wife and I, when I stood in front of 500 people in a Mormon church and we got married, I meant every word I said. And I love that woman to this day. Now, I wouldn't leave Sweetie. Two wrongs don't make a right. But in one of my amends to my first wife, many years later, after I'd made amends several times, we sat down one time when my youngest daughter was having a baby and I was staying with her. I won't get into a long story here. And we got home that night and I said, you know, I got something I need to tell you. And you just her and I there. And I said, I still love you and always have. The disease of alcoholism has nothing to do with whether I love you or not. And she's now has the experience of having three children that are alcoholic. And so she kind of knows that, but she cried. She's never remarried. She thanked me. I held her hand, you know, because I really do love her. Now, that's not a slight on Sweetie. You know, that has nothing to do with Sweetie. We families of Alcoholics Anonymous keep few skeletons in the closet. Everyone knows about the other's alcoholic troubles. This is a condition which in ordinary life would produce untold grief. There might be scandalous gossip, laughter at the expense of others, and a tendency to take advantage of intimate information. We talked about this a little bit the other day. Among us, these are rare occurrences. We do talk about each other a great deal, but we almost invariably temper such talk by the spirit of love and tolerance. Other principle we observe carefully is that we do not relate intimate experiences of another person unless we're sure he would approve. So I just get their approval before I listen to their to their fist step, you know, as long as I don't put their name on it, you know. We find it better, because my experience is not the only experience that might help somebody. We find it better when possible to stick to our own story. A man may criticize or laugh at himself, and it will affect others favorably. But criticism or ridicule coming from another often produces the contrary effect. Members of a family should watch such matters carefully, for one careless, inconsiderate remark has been known to raise the very devil. I am so self-centered sometimes I say things that hurt people's feelings without even knowing I'm hurting their feelings. It's never intentional. We alcoholics are sensitive people. I guess we are. It takes some of us a long time to outgrow that serious handicap. Many alcoholics are enthusiasts over that. They run to extremes. At the beginning of recovery, a man will take as a rule one or two directions. He may either plunge into frantic attempts to get on his feet in business, or he may be so enthralled by his new life that he will talk of or think of little else. We call it the pink cloud experience. We got a guy down in our area named Happy Jackson. He's been sober a long time. He tells people, don't listen to people about getting off the pink cloud. Stay there. It's a lot better. You don't have to go down. But there's always some guy in the back, you know. Somebody's having a great time in their chair and talking about Happy Joyce and Free the Art of Day, and they're just grinning from ear to ear. And he's sitting back, I ain't been here for 6 years like me. Life will hit you right in the face. Yeah, And if you need some help, just call on me. I don't want nothing you got, you know. You're about as dry as you can get. I don't know. I won't have you, George. I'll take the guy sitting here talking. In any case, certain family problems will arise, and with those you've had experiences galore. We think it's dangerous if he rushes headlong at his economic problems. The family will be affected also pleasantly at first as they feel their money problems are about to be solved. Then not so pleasantly as they find themselves neglected. In Bill's story, Lois had to go to work because Bill didn't work for 5 years. And she supported him at $72 a month. Said, Dad may be tired at night and preoccupied by day. He may take small interest in the children and may show irritation when approved for his delinquencies. If not irritable, he may seem dull and boring, not gay and affectionate as the family would like him to be. Mother may complain of inattention. They are all disappointed and often let him feel it. Beginning with such complaints, a barrier arises. He gets a resentment. That's what happens. He is straining every nerve to make up for lost time. He is striving to recover fortune and reputation. He feels he is doing very well. He needs God's help. If you're in strain here, you need God's help. You're trying to do something. If you're straining, it's not God's will. Sometimes mother and children don't think so. Having been neglected and misused in the past, they think father owes them more than they are getting. They want him to make a fuss over them. They expect him to give them the nice times they used to have before he drank so much and to show his contriteness for what they have suffered. When I appear before Al-Anon, and I certainly have had the same experience, I often make an amends to the group if no one's ever made an amends to you. They cry every time. You know, I just tell you, nobody's ever made an amends to you for what alcohol's done to you. I'd like to do that, you know, for those people that haven't. And they just, that's how hurt they are. The tears just flow, you know. But Dad doesn't give freely of himself. Resentment grows. He becomes still less communicative. Sometimes he explodes over trifles. The family is mystified. They criticize, pointing out that he's falling down on his spiritual program. They read the books, so they can use it against you. This sort of thing can be avoided. Both father and the family are mistaken. Though each may make some justification, it is of little use to argue and only make the impasse worse. The family must realize that Dad, though marvelously improved, is still convalescing. So there's a convalescing period they want to talk about here. They should be thankful he is sober and able to be in the world once more. Let them praise his progress. Let them remember that his drinking wrought all kinds of damage that may take long to repair. Lots of nice steps take lots of time. If they sense these things, they will not take so seriously this period of crankiness, depression, and apathy, which is really a dry drunk, which will disappear when their tolerance, love, and spiritual understanding. Take 4-9. The head of the house ought to remember that he is mainly to blame for what befell his home. He can scarcely square the account in his lifetime, but he must see the danger of over-concentration on financial success. Although financial recovery is on the way for many of us, we found we could not place money first. For us, material well-being always follows spiritual progress, never precedes it. Very important. A small thing about me. I've always wanted to be rich. Surprise, surprise. I always thought it would be nice to be a lawyer, but I never wanted to go to school. Maybe a doctor someday. I went to college 3 different times on the GI Bill and failed. Told you I failed everything I've ever done. In my last years, I was about 4 years sober. My second wife was a paralegal who had worked many years with judges and probably knew divorce work as well as anybody in the world. Well, I found that out later. She really did. So we had started in my recovery. She went to work for herself and started a low-cost domestic place in which the paperwork, and I've been a kind of a sales guy going up to the court and convinced the court that they ought to hand out our cards because the court clerks were taken up. They're really clerks. They take money in and paperwork in, but people want to ask them legal questions, and they can't do that, and sometimes the line gets... So Mr. Olson said, I think it's a wonderful idea, so they hand out cards. One thing led to another, and I ended up with a company called American Legal Centers that I created out of my mind. And it was a prepaid legal plan. And we ended up with 37 attorneys, 3 paralegals, just a ton of people, and we were just rolling. And after you have a working model of something for a while, you can go to the money lenders and get some money from them. They're called hard money lenders. And but we had a project, we had the people, we had a board of directors, we had a business plan written by Mike's brother, an excellent plan. We had everything we needed. I owned all the stock. And we were having these big meetings, and we're talking about how to raise money to go. This is a statewide corporation, and now we want to get some people to go statewide. Man, I could see this thing expanding out, and I'm going to be the CEO of this huge thing. And I was thinking, I was so proud of me. I'm letting go of control. I'm letting other people do things, you know. Why not? They're college educated. So this whole thing takes place, and one day, by this time, I had gone broke in my, I call it my year in the desert. And my wife and I had a fight, and I realized I had married a woman I didn't love. And there's nothing worse than you can do to another human being than that, because you keep her from finding somebody that might love her. And we were together, up to 7 years, and I wasn't going to get married again. I knew she wanted to, so I said, let's just get married. And then, in drunk, of course, that was always makes it better. And then, we're together 4 years, and I get sober, and oh my, things change. So I tell people, don't get too excited till you get through your fifth step about your life. Just leave it alone like it is for now. And I, by this time, I have been stripped of everything. I'm living in a little coffee office downstairs that has a sink and a refrigerator, and I'm paying the woman $25 a month to take a shower at her house. This is not what I call divorce, but yet I'm the CEO. I mean, that doesn't tell you. And I hit the door one morning as I leave this little room, and I was all alone for about a year. And it was, I call it my year in the desert. It was great as I look back on it. It was, I had to get with God or get out, one or the other. And so I reached for the doorknob one day, and I get voices, and some people think I'm crazy, but the voice said, "This is not for you. Let it keep operating. I got other things I want you to do." And I went, "Why now?" I mean, we're right on the border. It looks good, you know. And I'll give all the money to you. Don't just let this work. Now I got other things. Oh, Jesus. So I said, "All right." And so I go off doing spiritual work, and that's where I've been ever since. And 2 weeks from the time of that decision, a man called me from down in Los Angeles. He said, "Would you like to live in my folks' house?" And I said, "Oh, John, that's a mansion. That's a three-story mansion on top of Pill Hill, which is the most expensive area in Martinez. Only the richest of the rich live up there." I said, "You know, John, I can't." He said, "Are you still living in the office?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well," he said, "would you like to live there?" And I said, "Oh, John, I couldn't afford that." He said, "You don't listen." See, my head is chained to old ideas. I must pay something. And so we talked about it a little more, and I said, "What's going on, John?" He said, "My mother fell in broke her hip, and we have her in a very nice. We paid a lot of money. His dad was a doctor." And he said, "We just want you to live there." I said, "Well, what about the phone?" And he said, "Oh, if you make a long distance call, put a couple of bucks in a glass, I'll pick it up when I'm up there." I said, "Well, I'll mow the yard." He said, "Don't do that. Jose mows the yard, been doing it for 25 years. Don't take money out of his pocket. He's got to feed his family." And I'm feeling really uncomfortable, you know. And so he said, "My brother will meet you up there this afternoon and give you the key." I'm talking about a place that has a grand piano in the foyer. I'm talking about a place that has china and silver and linen tablecloth. Beautiful. Just beautiful. I wouldn't even go in there because I thought I'd break something. But I loved that place after I got used to it. It was great.
You know, and I'm not paying a dime. And people would come up there and I'd be doing this. Oh, I knew you had money and you're the CEO, but boy, I didn't know it was like this, you know. This is not my place. They couldn't believe that, you know. It was great, you know. I just can't tell you. The deer would come around and nibble on the little flowers and the skunks would run by and oh, it was just great places. And I would, to tell you the truth, I loved the bathroom setup. They had a tub that was long enough for big guys, and I'd get in that thing and take a soaking bath, and I could run naked through the house. And I'd run into the shower and try that a while. And then I'd drop down to the second floor and use that one a minute. Then I'd go down to the basement, which wasn't a basement, and I finally ended up living there. But oh my God, what a place to live. And I truly have to believe it's all because I said yes. You know. Sweetie came in my life there. I mean, just a lot of things have happened to me that have been so good. I'll just tell you. So, the head of the house ought to remember that he has many the blame for what befell his home. You betcha. He can only square the accounts in his lifetime, but he must see the danger of over-concentration on financial success. Although financial recovery is on the way, for many of us, we found we could not place money first. For us, material progress always follows spiritual progress. It never precedes it. Trust God, steps 1, 2, and 3. Clean house, 4 through 9, and serve others. And God will keep his promise he made you in the third step. I live on that promise. You will always keep that promise. Since the home has suffered more than anything else, it is well that a man exert himself there. He is not likely to get far in any direction if he fails to show unselfishness and love under his own roof. Sometimes we treat our sponsorees better than we do our own families. We know that these are difficult. There are difficult wives and families, but the man who's getting over alcohol must remember he did much to make them so. Put them on the harms list. You betcha. As each member of a resentful family begins to see his shortcomings and admits them, they take step 4 and 5, the family does. He lays a basis for helpful discussion. Each family talk will be constructive if they can be carried on without heated argument, self-pity, self-justification, or resentful criticism. Little by little, mother and children will see that they ask too much, and father will see he gives too little. Giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. What can I do for you today? I'm a little nervous this weekend. Sweetie's got to go on Wednesday. Now, she just had her heart replaced, but Sweetie's a lot younger than me, but she's the sick one. I'm just old. But see, I take pills and get okay, but she don't. And, she's got to have her upper teeth pulled. And we think maybe her heart deal may have come from an infection of the tooth that infected the valve. And so we're a little nervous. And so Wednesday, I'm dedicated to her. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'll do nothing but look after her. And I will take her to the dentist because she trusts me. And if that goes fine, then we'll drive her over to the guy who makes the teeth, and she'll be fitted with some teeth. And then I'll bring her home, and I'll take care of her and look after her. And it may be for several days until she can get her own autonomy back. Assuming, on the other hand, that Father has, at the onset, a spiritual experience overnight, as he is there, he is a different man. That's what happened to Bill Wilson. Different and stayed different. He became a religious enthusiast. He is unable to focus on anything else. As soon as his sobriety begins to take in as a matter of course, the family may look at their strange new dad with apprehension and then with irritation. There is talk about spiritual matters morning, noon, and night. He may demand the family find God in a hurry or exhibit amazing indifference to them and says he's more has more above worldly considerations. He may tell mother he has been religious all of her life, that she doesn't know what she's talking about. We get into some of that sometimes in here.